Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today. We're glad you found us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Reykjavik in Iceland. I'm here with my wife, Wendy.
Hello.
And our friends, Vicky and Steve. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
This is our fourth show on our journey in Europe, which began in Norway, continued through England, and is ending now in the island nation of Iceland. I am munching on a delicious piece of hardfiska, folks. It's a dried piece of haddock that is the ritual snack food of Iceland. My fellow travelers, though, have balked at the idea of eating hardfisk and left the whole package for me to finish now. I must admit, it starts off a bit like paper, but it gets better and better as you keep chewing.
Fishy paper.
Yeah, fishy paper. Think fishy beef jerky. Good. I think it tastes reasonable, but it's supposed to smell terrible while it's being cured. They hang it up in sheds for months. And it can either be made of cod or haddock or wolf fish. But I'm having the haddock version. So when it comes to new things, you know, it's a nice change from the delicious meat pies we've been enjoying in good old England. They're masters of the steak and ale pie over there. Anyway, enough about exotic foods. Our theme today is travel as generous curiosity. And to travel well, of course, is to be open, isn't it? I've noticed that in the last few days we've been a bit of tourists because we tried to see a lot of Cornwall. And now we're going to try and see a lot of Iceland. And there is a difference when you've got time just to relax and look and be, as opposed to rushing to see as many sites as possible. Our friends, of course, have spent 2 weeks just crossing Devon from coast to coast on the Two Moors Walk. And so they've had a chance to slow down. And we did too, and spending some days in one place at a time. But to travel well, and I want to throw this open to everybody, to travel well is to be open and receptive and generous-hearted, because, you know, if you're closed-minded, you're not going to see a lot, yeah?
Absolutely right. The best surprises I've gotten have been when either a Britisher strikes up a conversation with me or the other way around. It's just been fascinating to find out what the local individual is thinking about, what they're spending their time doing, how they plan to spend the next day and the one after that.
And I think even though it may not always work out well, quote, you know, things can happen. Looking back, it becomes a fun experience. We had a bit of an eccentric host in one of our bed and breakfasts who had certain ways of doing things that we had to abide by. And at the time it seemed ridiculous, but looking back on it, it makes a good story, and it really didn't hurt us anyway. But it was funny. This particular one insisted on bringing toast at the end of the breakfast. And of course, I love my toast. I like my toast all the way through breakfast. And so the first day I didn't get any because he was too busy with another guest. And the second day I had little ends, After a while, I thought he was playing with me around about the toast, but it was a lesson for me, you know, not to eat so much toast, I guess.
Well, it was a lesson for you to just relax.
Oh, there
and
we
let
go.
People do, I mean, you know,
different, relax. What are you talking
when
about?
When you go different places and you travel, finding the customs and how people talk and what they have to say, what they have to say to you in how they look at you as a foreigner, how they look at you as a, you know, as an individual or a person. And it changes. Some people are, you know, of course, like anywhere, are very open. And then others are very, no, this is the way we do it. And we are, you know, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, should we say. I mean, we were even commenting in here in Iceland, it says, keep the countertops dry and open the windows for ventilation when you've used the shower. We have to remember that they, you know, different people deal with different things and deal with them different ways than what we do at home.
Even when it's only 40 degrees Fahrenheit when we're opening those windows. So, you know, it's all relative. And it is a little cold here. This is the coldest we've had so far on the trip. And we're okay. We have coats and everything, but it's a bit nippy. But that's part of it, you know. It's if you want to just have beautiful weather all the time, I guess you can spend your time in the Mediterranean or the Caribbean. But if you want to see other climes, then you've got to get used to some different climates and temperatures.
And it seems like the people in different climates, they act differently. It was like we noticed in Norway that they were more staid people. They were more into their own. And as I was walking down the street today and I commented to Vicky, I feel like I'm all bundled up in my nice clothes and I have this shell on top of me. And me, who me is down underneath and, you know, all nice and warm and cozy. And I think that people that live in colder climates, that they sort of act like that too. It takes a while to get through a shell where if you live in a sunny climate and you don't have as maybe much as a shell. They're usually more bolsterous or open people. What should I say? How should I say that?
That's all going to change tomorrow, Wendy, when we get to the thermal baths and everybody jumps in and they won't have any protections. They're going to be the Vikings that they really are. So you can just look out for that one, right? When I last talked to Vicky and Steve on the show, they just begun their walk across the moors. We were in Widdicombe and taking a break looking at the beautiful village of Widdicombe. And of course, it was Widdicombe Fair. Now they've done and completed their task, about 112 miles altogether. And so what did you learn? What's the thing that you remember most right now?
I think I most still remember Widdicombe Fair. Was the most fun, the most unique, varied experience. But the final day, walking across Exmoor in a wind that had to have been blowing 40 miles an hour,
wow,
trying to blow me uphill even when I was trying to walk down it, it was exhilarating. It was lonely. Spent about half a mile of that day walking with a friend we'd met along the trail, but we had different paces and we separated. And I pushed on. I found Hannah walked a little bit slower than I, and afterwards we ran into her again. She, just as I disappeared over a hill, she spotted one of the Exmoor ponies and crouched down rather than walking and managed to lure an entire herd to within feet of her.
Wow. Very cool.
Well, it's tough when you walk too fast and you're a little bit too determined to get to a place and you miss the things that you could see if you slowed down a bit and looked.
And sometimes when you're walking fast like that, I mean, is the end destination, you feel like you have to get there. Mm-hmm. You have to make the destination, but to pace yourself and to see the other things and to have enough confidence maybe to slow down and look.
Yeah. Even so, it's pretty satisfying to have completed a walk from the English Channel to the Bristol Channel.
Absolutely. It's got to have a sense of accomplishment. Well, we walked out on the moor one day and just to do about 2 hour walk. And we just chose a spot on Exmoor, not really knowing where we were, just thought, well, that's a walk, it's a bridle way, we'll walk down there. But we were rewarded because we ended up looking down on the valley of, which is made famous by the book Lorna Doone, if you've ever read that. Maybe seen the movie they made about Lorna Doone, but set in the 17th century about outlaws and mistaken identities and you name it. But we were looking right down on the farm of Lorna Doone and some of the little paths that were used, you know, in the story itself. And right there where there was a crossing on the ford, right in the middle of the wilderness, a herd of the ponies came and we were able to walk right up to them, maybe 10 feet away, which was very good. And supposedly the Exmoor ponies are some of the more the wild ponies that exist, that they trace their hereditary to wild horses. And they certainly look that way. I posted a few on my Facebook if you're a member of my Facebook. And they just have that sense of you're in a wild, primeval place when you're on that moor. Very different from Dartmoor. Dartmoor's much more rocky, isn't it? I think you like the rocky Wendy a little more. But it's got a certain peacefulness about it. And that's true of all the moors, isn't it? There's a certain peace.
They're wild and lonely places, and they just are beautiful.
Right. And they keep changing, I think. The colors, the moods, depending on the weather, the light. Of course, time of year, you know, you get various things blooming. And
so, which it looks barren when you first look out on them. And then when you get closer, you realize that those are plants and that they have a variety of color. And the golden color is spectacular. But there's a variety of plant and a variety of color going on. But when you look from afar, it sort of seems like a barren type landscape.
I think one of the more remarkable things for me, of course, a bit of a nostalgic thing, was one day we were walking the cliff path outside of Lynmouth in North Devon on the Bristol Channel, and it was a very beautiful day. The sea was quite calm and was throwing different shades of blue and green because of the currents, which you could see more because there was less waves. And we were up there on these cliffs, which are at least 1,000 feet high, which is quite dramatic. But it looks over to Wales, so I could see all the land of my childhood on the opposite side of the estuary. And it just seemed so beautiful there. And I don't think I appreciated how beautiful it was when I was a kid. I'm sure I missed it at one level, because we used to travel over there and go on vacations in these areas. But looking at it today, I feel, wow. What wonderful environment you grew up in. You know, I think that's true for all of us. We tend to dismiss what's right under our noses because we are so familiar with it, perhaps, or we know all its nuances and negativities and all the problematic nature of it. But when you come at it with fresh eyes, you realize, wow, so much to be grateful for. And as I always like to say on our shows, it's not about where we've been, it's where we are right now, how we can appreciate what's all around us. And that's part of traveling, because life, in a sense, is a journey, and we're on that journey right now. How are we going to be open and receptive, right? Generously curious. And I'm a big proponent of staying open and curious. I know you are, Wendy, right?
Yes, I am. I don't mind not having everything planned. I don't mind having to figure things out, and sometimes it takes a little longer, sometimes it's not exactly the way you want it or would like it, but I would prefer that than to have planned fun. And I would also, one of the things back to walking, they say that walking, that you just see so much more, that you're in touch with the things around. And like, we walked all over the city of Reykjavik today and enjoyed the architecture and the light play, and saw people that live in the town walking around. And walking versus, I guess, riding in a car or even being in a tour bus, just brings things more to life. And at the time, you might not even think that you're doing anything, but then when you think about it later on, I think it brings a full body of information and ideas to you.
Well, it's coming back to human size again, I guess, isn't it? You know, we're meant to walk in a sense. If we're in our vehicles, and we love our vehicles, we're not saying we shouldn't have cars to ride around in, that they're fun, and trains or planes or whatever. But human size is walking and or running or hobbling, depending on your age. Excuse me. And so, you know, that's where we begin to fit in, I think, fit in with our environment and begin to see things.
No, it's just like what I said about the moor, that if we stayed in our car and never got out of our car, never dared venture down one of the paths that you think, is that even a path? But their parking lots are like just little alcoves that are off the side of the two-lane road. But if you didn't ever venture down those paths, you would never see the variety of the plant life and the ponies and, you know, et cetera, if you just stayed in your car and drove through it.
Right. A couple of points there. I think Steve had an encounter, didn't you, with a red deer, right, that suddenly came out of nowhere.
It startled me. It certainly startled him while I was coming down off the moor in Exmoor. To the little town of High Hoxer, not High Hawk, Hawk County, Hawkridge. And a red stag startled from the bracken, not 30 feet from where I was walking, sprang away and then turned around to look at me as if, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Yeah. And we had a similar experience. I'm a bit of a birder, so I was looking for birds, and we'd stopped at this little pool on the river in near a place called Watersmeet. Beautiful wooded valleys and pure streams that are some of the best salmon fishing in Great Britain. And we just sat there for a while, enjoying the pool and thinking about the pools in Texas, how that's such a lovely thing on rivers and streams. Creeks in Texas, for instance, you can find these pools that make great swimming holes. A little bit cool in Britain to go swimming, but at one point there was a dipper who started bobbing around on the stone and then flew down the river. And it's a water bird. It's got sort of good gray and white on it. And just a great bird to see because they're not that common. And again, we were in Land's End and the choughs, which we used to be common around the coast of Britain, now they're quite rare. But they're crow-like birds, but they have beautiful scarlet legs and scarlet beaks. And we all saw the chough, right? There was a chough just with a bunch of jackdaws, which are more common, and it was just pecking around in the grass there. And we thought, oh my God, that's a rare bird right there, 2 yards from us, right at Land's End. So. That was cool.
That was close enough for Steve to be able to note that it had been tagged.
Right, yeah. It'd been ringed.
It had been ringed.
Yeah. So, you know, that shows you how rare it is that they ring these birds so they can follow them and see, you know, their habits or whatever. So a blessing to see that kind of unusual bird. But you don't do that until you can just walk around and just stroll and see and look and see what shows up in life.
But anytime, you know, we've talked before about plein air, or what is it called in French?
Oh, plein air.
Plein air, where people just walk. They just start off and they walk. And you can do that anywhere. You, not even being on vacation, you can just start somewhere and walk and note the things you see in it. I think it changes your mindset a little bit. It brings you to a more detailed version of life, which is somewhat calming doing that. when you have that more detailed, and you get very present in the moment and enjoying, and it seems like problems fade away, I think, when you do stuff like that.
You sort of put it in its right relation, don't you? You have a chance just to not think for a while, and that's important, I think, not thinking. We spend so much of our time planning and thinking.
Just observe.
It's just observe and allow your deeper sense of who you are to come forth. So you've been now to Cornwall and Devon, right? Mm-hmm. So what did you see any differences? Did you enjoy one over the other?
I think on balance, I preferred Devon, but over Cornwall, though that's not any disservice to Cornwall. Cornwall is it's the end of the world as far as the UK is concerned.
Right.
It's a bit more sparse, a little more restrained in its landscape. It's beautiful hills and green as ever, but I think the soil is a little thinner, the trees are a little shorter and a little more windblown. And I found I was amazed with the kind of respect that people could carve out a living on land like that over generations.
I've been thinking about being here in Iceland. I'm amazed at how people that live in a landscape like this can possibly make a living out of it and make a home out of it and make... I mean, obviously they have, and it's quite comfortable, but yet it feels so remote from what somebody that lives in the city is used to.
Yeah, we'll talk more about Iceland in the second segment, and this that we're still just exploring it because I haven't been out into the boonies yet, out into the really wild. But just coming from the airport is a part of a wild experience because the ground is extremely rocky and mossy and rugged, inhospitable, certainly no room for agriculture, just a wild landscape. But I had different experience. I think I loved Cornwall because of the water, the proximity to the ocean. And there's a lot of drowned valleys, so to speak. They're called rias, and a bit like fjords, but they're created in a different way. But the same idea, you've got this water, seawater coming in many miles from the sea and creating these beautiful inlets. And there's one particular one called Helford Water that I just fell in love with because it comes in, like we said, from the sea and has all kinds of rich ecosystem to it, which, you know, is rare today. And oak woods coming down to the water, and a lot of people in the past began gardens on the side of the on the slope going down, and those gardens are still being maintained today. And we went to one, right, to Treba, and it was pretty nice, wasn't it?
Treba was remarkable. It's semi-tropical in a place that I wouldn't think would support that. I guess it's sheltered from the harshest winds.
Right.
But to see the variety of plants that they've gathered there over decades, and to see a 2-acre plantation of hydrangeas, all colors of the rainbow, but largely blue.
It's right.
Unusual where I come from.
Yeah, very beautiful place and peaceful now, but in the Second World War, it was one of the staging posts for D-Day, and there were 7,000 American troops ready to go over to the beaches there in Normandy, and so we thank them for their service to Britain and to the world at that time, because we were in a desperate situation, and now it's, of course, it's very calm and seems like bucolic idyllic scenery, but it has a history. And in the 19th century, the tin industry was very important, and in that particular part of the world. And so there was a town called Gweek. At the far end of the water, that was a very important tin exporting town at that time. That was just a sleepy little hamlet. And the other thing that fascinated me was the Phoenicians had come there. Even the Romans were there, but even before them, the Phoenicians came to find tin. And that the Phoenicians, of course, come from Tyre and Sidon in the Holy Land on the eastern part of the Mediterranean. So it's a long, long way to come to Cornwall to find the metal they were looking for. So fascination of the history as well as the beautiful quality of the natural world there.
We went in a pub while we were there.
Just one. We haven't gone to many pubs.
No, but we went in a pub while we were there, and we walked to that particular one, and we noted how many young people were in the pub. That was very interesting because there's usually a variety of people, but here you are, you know, really you're back up against the ocean, way on out there, and there was a lot of young people, and that just shows the vibrancy of the area, I think, that there was that many, you know, around. And there was a group standing around when we first came in, and then there was others that came in, and then there was a group of women that were meeting, and they were obviously having a meeting sitting there. And I love that about pubs. It's pubs are so different from an American concept. They're a meeting place that the people in the town meet at, and you get to know a town a little bit by how a pub comes together and who's in it.
Right, and you know, that old style community center pub idea is something that's precious, I think, because it's being lost. You know, a lot of pubs are turning into a different kind of place, a sort of a theme pub. And so it's nice to go back to that community. And I think we're yearning for that anyway in our society, to have places where we can gather. I think that's why Starbucks, for instance, is so popular, because it forms the same kind of community space, right, where we can just sit and talk and enjoy. And so that's valuable, I guess, whatever we think about Starbucks. All right, we're at the break. When we come back, we'll talk more about our journey to Europe. And join us then after these messages from Unity.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
It takes you to power Unity Online Radio. If you'd like to make a positive difference in the world, you can by contributing to this global ministry. Unity Online Radio relies on listeners like you to support our broadcasts that send our messages out to an awakening world. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate today.
Here's a Unity Mindful Moment with Eric Butterworth, taken from the live lecture, A Course in Practical Metaphysics.
Emily Cady, in her Lessons in Truth, makes a statement which I think we need to kind of think about a little bit. She says, God is not a being with qualities or attributes, but he is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, wisdom, etc. He is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, and wisdom. In other words, and this again is shattering to some of us, God is not loving. Ah, God is a loving God. God is not loving. Because the moment we talk about God as loving, we've got the anthropomorphic Michelangelo-like God sitting up in a crowd somewhere with his heart beaming out, saying, oh, I love you all down there, so you're so dearly, as long as you're good. But I'm not going to love you very much if you don't go to church and so forth. God is not loving. God is love.
To find out more about Eric Butterworth, visit unity.org.
Did you know you can reach Unity's 24/7 prayer ministry online? You don't even have to give your name to know the prayers have begun for you or those you love. Someone has been praying around the clock at Silent Unity since 1890, and every request is taken into prayer for 30 days. Why not let us pray with you too? To submit your prayer request to Silent Unity online, go to unity.org and click on prayer, or call 816-969-2000.
What if you could start each day with a positive outlook, remembering you are a divine expression of God? Daily Word is a booklet of daily devotionals offering positivity that's downright contagious. With a print subscription or by email, you can pause to reflect on how to practice spirituality in your human experience. Reading Daily Word takes about a minute a day, so you can feel uplifted every morning. Visit dailyword.com to subscribe.
More and more people are interested in a vegan lifestyle, and the numbers continue to grow. Join Victoria Moran every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central for Main Street Vegan and learn how to make the shift to help animals and the planet. Each week, Victoria shares recipes, health tips, and interviews with celebrity vegans, experts, and activists. Learn how to make a difference for animals and the planet at every meal. Right here on Unity Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. This is our last show in the series of Travel to Europe. We're going to be back in the good old US of A next week, but I'm here with my friends Vicky and Steve Brown and with my wife Wendy. We're talking about generosity and open-mindedness and curiosity when it comes to travel, and I would extend that to journeying in general. We must stay open and receptive, curious about what's going on in life. T.S. Eliot famously said, old men should be explorers. And I'd say old men, young men, old women, young women, all of us need to be explorers. But I think what he was going to there, what he was trying to focus on was the idea that sometimes we're in the been there, done that generation, you know, everything's old. And when you do get old, you think you've seen it all before, you know, and so you don't look. But it's always good, I think, to look with fresh eyes if you can. Maintain that childlike spirit. Explore. Never give up. And I think that's what we like about our spiritual teachers, who are genuine spiritual teachers, is that they have that childlike curiosity and optimism. I think the Dalai Lama is a good example of that with his infectious laughter and his openness, and others we may have come across. There are examples of staying fresh, right? And that's what we're called upon to do. And I know the show that we put on, you never know how it's going to affect people. And Vicky wanted to share a little bit about our hosts that we were staying with in Widdicombe. Lovely couple. One was Japanese woman. And the other one was a photographer, wasn't he, I think?
Or he was an engineer,
that's right. But I think he'd taken some good photos, yeah. That we saw. Tell us about that, Vicky.
So we did the last program from their dining room. And, of course, we talked about our experiences at Widdicombe Fair during the day. And that night, Miho came into the sitting room where we were, and we told her we had done that broadcast, and she was very excited about that. She also started sharing with us some of her art and her experiences with other different types of artists in that area, which it enriched everything for us.
Fabric artist.
The work was gorgeous. So I wrote down the website for her to go to listen to the broadcast from that night before. And we went to bed and they went to bed. The next morning we got up ready to pack up and leave. And as we were doing so, Peter came out and started chatting with us. And then she came out. And it wasn't a late morning for us. It was about 9 or 9:30. We were getting off on the road pretty early. They had already listened to the whole program. And Peter's comment was, you felt the people, you felt the place, you experienced us And that's very special. Most people just come through and take pictures.
He said we participated in their community.
Right, there we go. And, you know, there is a tendency today, isn't there, to take pictures, right? I know I like to take shots, but also like to look before and after the shot. Because sometimes what we'll do is click, and I've seen it, you know, and you haven't really seen it. You know, you just clicked it, and you put it away. And so we're doing a disservice to our own ability to be present if we're letting the camera be present for us.
What I liked was that Peter and Miho invited us back the next year for Whitcomb Fair. Well, they asked us to come about a week early so they could put us to work.
They said they'd give us jobs.
They're both highly involved in the fair. But yeah, I think Vicky's right. That was very sweet that they wanted to listen to it so soon after it came out and had an insight into, you know, what we were trying to share. And that's good because it speaks to what we're talking about, going a little deeper. Let's go really deep. Our occasional koan that we have on the show sometimes. And today's occasional koan, if you're familiar with a koan, it's a Japanese Zen riddle, if you like, that makes no sense. You can't work it out with your rational brain. You have to go into an intuitive knowing to solve the koan. If you try and solve it through your discursive mind, you're going to be sadly crestfallen, because you'll probably get a strike from the Zen master's baton. But if you do well, he'll smile at you, you know. And here's the koan. Are you ready? When we saw this, it was just written on the side of the lift, the elevator that was going up to the top of the church. I think it's called the Hallgrímskirkja. In Reykjavik, it's already on the top of a hill, and then you've got this large tower that goes up and gives a stupendous view of the whole of Reykjavik. Anyway, it just scrawled on the side there. It said, 1 = normal. Now, please cogitate, folks, for a while. 1 = normal. Vicky and Steve have been cogitating this all afternoon, and they have their own unique insight into what it means. I don't know about you.
Not yet, I don't.
Well, I had one.
That one's deep.
Yeah, that's deep.
I had one. I mean, when I saw that, I mean, it was written above a lock, which I'm not sure exactly, like a key lock. I'm not sure exactly what it had to do with a key lock, because there was no 1 on the key lock. So, but it said 1 = normal. And I thought, you know, what I thought was that we're all normal when we think of ourselves as we're all in this together. We're all part of the universe. We all breathe the same air. We all have moms, we all have dads, we all have families, we all have needs and wants. And when you think about that, then other people don't look different from you. They're just normal. We're just all normal.
I like that. Because in this world of division, you know, we see everything in twos, right? And so what you're speaking to is the idea of our oneness, or 1 = normal. When we're two, maybe we're a little abnormal. You know, we're seeing things in a way that God never intended, because we are one in spirit. There are no boundaries. When you look down from space, there's no boundaries. It's only when you enter the world of humanity that there's boundaries. So we are one in truth. So yeah, I like that. I think you get an extra rice cake now in the monastery. Yeah,
I want an extra lobster tail.
I like that a lot better than the limited take I was coming up with it. I think 1 = normal. Is it a digital world? Is this as opposed to analog? I mean, is 1 normal and 0 is not?
Right. There we go.
And zeros, yes and no.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
I like that interpretation.
That's true, yeah.
But
the binary.
I always like the 0 and the 1 analogy. I mean, the whole world exists on that. I mean, this whole computer crazed world that we have exists on something that is so basic. And so it's like we complicate things. We don't need anything else. We just need the basics. And the basics, living in the basics, or living in the present moment, you see the so much more potential, it, just like the zero and the one has so much more potential, but it just looks like a zero and a one.
Right.
I'm just worried about 0.5. I'm sorry.
Oh, please, Vicky.
Well, there you go. And folks, if you have an answer to this this koan, 1 equals normal, please let us know. You can email me at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com, or you can talk to us at the call into the station. We'd be happy to hear your results on that koan. In terms of Iceland, I came to Iceland in the late 90s for the first time. And coming back to Iceland today, it blew my mind in a sense, because it was so different from what I remembered. And I was talking to our host here at the Airbnb we're in here in Reykjavik, and they said, yeah, everything started changing around 2000, new buildings, whatnot. And of course, they suffered a terrible collapse, didn't they, in 2008. But then the rebound happened, and now the economy's thriving. We were noting all the cranes that were everywhere. When I came in from the airport the last time, there was nothing. Now there's whole towns and developments. The town of Reykjavik seems to be 3 or 4 times as big as it was back then. And that's great, I guess, in the sense that things have modernized. But just amazing, the shift and change. And one place I went to in 1998, I guess it was the diplomatic quarter of Reykjavik. And there's a little garden there that has a interesting sculpture. It's a sculpture of a smooth piece of granite being crushed by a jagged piece of granite. And yet there's also the symbolism of the smooth piece rising up to throw off the yoke of the larger piece. And it was given to the people of Iceland by the people of Latvia, which at that time was still struggling under the yoke of the Russian, the Soviet system. And it was just a few years later that the changes happened and the collapse of the Soviet Union. So, when I first saw it, it was still very much under, Latvia was much under the control of Russia, and now that's shifted. But of course, we still have difficulties with great empires and power structures. But interesting to revisit it again, 20 years later, and seeing things have changed. There's a lot of changes that have gone on. I sometimes muse that we end up dying not because we get old, but because we can't handle change anymore. There's too much change in the world. And it's time for us to let go and let a new generation come along. I think there's some truth to that. We often say, don't we, if somebody came back from 1,000 years ago and saw the nature of things today, their brains would explode. They wouldn't be able to take it in because there's been so much change. But when it's incremental, you get used to it. One thing I do know, though, is that the people of Iceland are friendly people. We went into a fish store where I bought the special dried fish that he recommended that nobody else wants to eat. But he also gave us some amazing smoked Arctic char and some langoustine, which we're going to cook up now after the show is over. But very friendly, told us all kinds of things, recommended things. And we found that, I think, in general, that they're friendly people. They're Nordic people in the sense that they keep themselves to themselves to a degree, but very friendly when you talk, and open-hearted, open-minded people.
I think when Wendy observed earlier that when teenagers laugh, pass you on the street, they laugh just the same as teenagers everywhere.
They were. We passed a group of teenage girls, and they were giggling as any group of teenage girls could possibly giggle any place else in the world. And we encountered that different places and thought, yep, here's our teenagers. Here's part of our, our youngins that are all over the world, and they speak that same lovely language of a laugh.
Yeah, there we go. Which is, again, we said old men and old women should be explorers. I think we have to keep laughing too, you know, because if we lose our laughter, it becomes deadly serious, and we don't want that in our world. And laughter is good medicine too. It oxygenates our bodies and lightens our minds. So,
I read this on a UNESCO City of Literature plaque. Theodora, I can't pronounce her last name, but she was a poet. She was a poet. She had she had 13 children, and she wrote poetry. But this is what she wrote in what that was quoted on the plaque. It said, "In this world, it was my work on days both hot and cold to wipe kids' bums and comb their hair and race to mend their clothes. I yearn to leap and run free like a lamb loosed from its fold." I thought, here, this lovely picture of this woman who did her work. I mean, that was her job. That was where she was born. That was what she was. She knew that was her part on this earth, was to raise these 13 children. I wondered, where are those 13 kids that had such a dedicated person that knew that the task for them was to take care of them, even though she wanted to leap and run free like a lamb loosed from its fold?
Obviously, she did that, right, in a sense, because she wrote as
in
well.
In writing.
Right, so she didn't just talk about it or yearn for it. She put it into words. Even though she had a hard row to hoe, she freed herself through her literature, and that's what we're all called upon to do, I think, is to find some way to be free, even if it's a difficult time. And that's true with traveling. I mean, yesterday was a long day, right? We came all the way from London Heathrow to Reykjavik, and then we had some hassles with the rental car and whatnot. And you could let it get to you, oh my goodness, I hate traveling, whatever. But if you take it in stride and say, this is just the way it goes sometimes, you deal with it, and it doesn't become a problem. In fact, that's another question I have for everybody today is, you know, what is a problem? We like to say in Unity, we don't have problems, we only have challenges or whatever, become a bit of a cliche. But everything is an opportunity, isn't it, to learn something new. And that's not to put down or diminish people who are suffering terribly. Obviously, those sufferings, that pain is real. But how do we approach it? I've seen people approach their illnesses with devastation, and in general, they don't usually survive very well. Whereas others have approached it with acceptance, and knowing it's difficult, but I still have an optimistic attitude, and they're often the ones that have come through a little better. I think the state of your consciousness is important in terms of how you approach illness, how you approach life in general, how you create a normality for yourself, to come back to that koan. I've got another few questions for our guests here, and that is, you know, we're going home, aren't we, in a few days? So where is home? I know I don't mean it literally, but you know, what is this thing we call home? Because say we didn't get back, you know, this is home right now, isn't it? This is all we have. So, you know, what do we call home? What's that?
Oh boy, home. To me, it's a familiar bed, familiar sounds when I wake up in the morning.
Right, that's good.
Knowing that my phone will work.
Yeah, very good.
I don't really have a good answer to that.
Those are good answers.
You know, the cliche is that home is where your heart is.
Right.
Right now, it's on the road.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, just say real quick though, that when you're traveling, I think we feel secure with those things, our bed, our phone working. We feel secure in those things. And when you're traveling, it's like you have to step up consciousness a little bit. You have to expand a little bit. And you have to say, okay, well, it was like, you know, none of us like the duvets. I mean, you know, the whole European world sleeps with a duvet and no top sheet, except for we travel, we bring our own top sheet. But it was like, you're either too hot or you're too cold. Well, Vicky adapted. I mean, she went and found a blanket and put the blanket on the bed. It's like we bring a sheet with us so that we have the comfort of our home. But when you're traveling or when you're not quite in your comfort zone, you have to be creative. You have to be creative and you have to raise your consciousness a little bit. And there's nothing wrong with it. I think the worst thing is getting fearful and going, oh no, this is not going to work out, or, you know, bringing it, just being miserable instead of being adaptive. So, Vicky, what do you...
Well, no, I think...
Well, I haven't told you guys about Hawkridge.
Uh-huh.
And Steve was going to do the harder part of the walk, and I was going to meet him at Hawkridge and do the prettier end of the walk. And so I got a ride to Hawkridge, which basically was four houses. And in the crossroad, there was a tree with a little bench built around it. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And of course, I had no coverage. So I couldn't find out where the path came into town. I couldn't find out where it went out of town.
You mean no phone coverage?
There was no phone coverage. There was nowhere at home. There was, however, a red British phone booth.
Yeah.
And I thought, really? Okay. And I walked over to it and I opened the door and it said, no phone, no cell phone coverage. Sorry.
Sorry, yeah.
But if you're really desperate, we are providing Wi-Fi for you. And here's the passcode.
Oh, my God.
And I said, wonderful. And I stood there and I tried to, and I never got on.
No.
So I sat there for over an hour. Every car that went by, I stopped them. I said, do you know this area? They all said, no, we're just passing through. I was faced with, I hope to heck he's going to walk through this lane.
Otherwise, deep doo-doo.
We're in deep doo-doo. And it worked out.
Uh-huh.
I looked up and there was my husband.
That's a nice sight.
And we walked on and we had a lovely day. So when I use this to illustrate, just saying you have all these things you try to fall back on and they all go away, still something is going to be there.
Yeah, something's going to work out.
Wonderful example. You had something to say, Steve, around that?
Just as a complete total aside, Hawkridge being the obvious example, the Red British phone booth is back, folks. This is good news for traditionalists and techies alike. In most villages where they were being pulled out before, they're there and they're alive, and now you can get internet and send an email and a fax.
Yeah, that's what they've
and still make a phone call.
Right. Most of them, they use them as centers where you do have free Wi-Fi or can make a connection.
So the great movement of phone booths to the U.S. to must now stop. But coming back to what Steve said earlier, you know, that idea that there's a comfortability to our homes, right? And I think what we're saying is we make wherever we are a comfortable place because there's good in everything. And, you know, people show up, you know. Even though you didn't know if they were going to, if you can trust and relax, it works out. And I'm a big advocate of that. I think the world works through synchronicities and we have to relax into that. And we get in the way sometimes by trying to plan and worry and fix everything. And when we can just sit back and relax and enjoy. All right.
But one thing about that, it occurs to me that one of the things about travel that can become a trap for you is to overplan it and to begin to feel the obligation that you have to make every moment when you're abroad count for something. Right. That you can't sleep in an extra hour, you can't read a chapter of a book because you're wasting time. And the flip side of that is that when you get home, all of a sudden you relax, you take a deep breath, and hey, I can sleep in until 9 or 10 o'clock this morning. I don't have to. And then you pick up the daily work and go about it.
Well, there is something to relaxing and making sure that you've relaxed and not having to see everything. I think that goes back to the quality of time that we were talking about earlier, that just walking down the street, you can absorb so much. And sometimes it's not until later that you remember those things and you look back on them, just like what y'all are looking back on them today. While Vicki was talking about meeting up with Steve, I remembered a time that Paul and I were in Japan and we were on a train traveling somewhere and we got our signals mixed up. And, you know, the train was full of people and he got off the train and I didn't. And the door closed, and I could see his face through the door. We both looked at each other, and we knew what we were going to do. But the little Japanese lady next to me, realizing that we had just gotten separated, she grabs my arm, and she's like, "Ooh!" And she's talking to me. And, of course, I can't understand anything she said, but I was assuring her that it was okay, that Paul and I knew what to do, that we would meet back. And it was like we had signaled to each other and we were fine. But it is an interesting experience that, I mean, you're in a twosome, you know, you're traveling with somebody and then all of a sudden you're all by yourself and you know things will work out.
That was a little scary at the time, but it did work out, yeah. Folks, we're at the end of this series, the end of this show. I hope you've enjoyed it. Next week, I've got a beginning of a four-part series. We're looking at New Thought today, its ups and its downs, and we're going to begin with an interview with Lola Wright. She's the dynamic and irrepressible spiritual leader of the Bodhi Center in Chicago. So join me then for that. And right now, I want to say thank you to Wendy, Vicki, and Steve for being with me.
All right, thank you.
And thanks for listening, folks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.